The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
But having said that, why don't I stop and take any questions y'all may have? And they tell me I'm supposed to call on Governor Cox first.
Great. I think we'll have
Supreme Court candidates.
Thank you, guys.
How long is your
shortlist? Thank you, guys. Let's go. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Let's go. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Every day is a dumpster fire in this administration, this fake, illegitimate administration. There's the fake president, Joe Biden, basically saying, they tell me to call on so-and-so, and then he opens it up for questions, only to be shot down by his handlers. They do not want him to take questions, not at this particular conference. So they're running the show, as we've said before. He's the puppet. Barack Obama is the puppet master. The White House is full of Barack Obama operatives. And as you'll see in the lead story that we lead off with here in a moment, more and more commentators are beginning to see that as well. The Trumpet magazine, remember, tomorrow's news today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience every day. The live stream, the live audio stream of this show goes out via CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3, every day live at 11 a.m. Oklahoma time, 9 a.m. out west, and noontime on the east coast of the United States. You can, of course, get to the live video stream of this show every day at our own website, our very own website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. You get to the stream page, and you can also get to those podcasts that are posted after the fact. As I say, with respect to the Trumpet, this is the anniversary issue. You can go to the website and see that we've already got the March issue posted. But here we are, 32 years in. This magazine's been around and still way ahead of its time. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Trumpet magazine, call our operators today. That's 1-866-930-3024. Our operators are standing by, ready and waiting to give you a free one-year subscription to the magazine. You can also get a subscription free through the website as well, thetrumpet.com. So Victor Davis Hanson, he has this piece on Joe Biden and the uses of nihilism. And he's among a growing number of commentators who now see that there is a puppet master behind this illegitimate administration currently occupying the White House. Victor Davis Hanson and a few others can now see that this is all part of the plan, what we've seen over the past 12 months. This is an attack on the United States of America. And if you go back far enough, even before the Trumpet, you go back to the plain truth from the 1950s. And there was Herbert Armstrong warning about the communist infiltration into the United States, into academia, into popular culture, into government. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it now. It's not just an infiltration. It's in control, this communist movement. Barack Obama was a trained communist. He was president for 8 years. And here he is now, carrying out his third term as president of the United States. And every once in a while, somebody in the White House there lets it slip that they're very, very, very proud and thankful that they're working for President Obama. That's right. You've heard the clips before. I won't play them again. But here's Victor Davis Hanson, who says, chaos is the intentional normal. The chaos that we're seeing all around us. This is normal. The way they view it. The way the communists view it. This is what they want. They want to bring down the system. As we've said so many times before, it's, and he was right. Herbert Armstrong was right about this. It says, a pandemic of nihilism has been unleashed upon the land. No prior president has not only violated his oath of office to enforce the laws of the United States, but simply and intentionally destroyed the law as it was written. He's violating his oath of office. He's destroying the law, the foundational law in the process. This is not normal, Victor Davis Hanson says. No prior president has done this. Well, in fact, one has. Barack Obama did. He came in vowing to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And he's carrying out that mission, even in front of all of us. It's right in front of our eyes. You can see it. It's now so obvious. It says, in other words, the catastrophe of 2021 was no accident, but a tactic in service of a strategy. This is not an accident. This is not incompetence coming out of the White House that's causing, you know, the inflation to skyrocket or crime to skyrocket, crime statistics. It's not an accident that the southern border is wide open and that 2 million illegals have come in over the past 12 months. Think about that as it continues. There's no end in sight. 2-3 million more this year. You add another couple million, 3 million on top of that next year. What is the United States going to look like in just a few years? It's all part of the attack. It says here, so in the vast multiracial democracy of tribal competition and tensions, Biden has done his best to turn Americans against each other. And then Victor Davis Hanson concludes with this. Listen to this. The movers of the agenda are the hard left of the Democratic Party, those who circle around Bernie Sanders, the Obamas, Elizabeth Warren, and the squad. The shock troops are Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the millions on the campus, and the internet mob. It says, the more confusion, chaos, and anarchy that follows, the more of their agenda they hope to push through. The more chaos, the more anarchy, the more it suits their agenda. The more it supports their agenda. This is why they encourage BLM and Antifa to destroy cities. And why they say about their opposition that even when it's completely peaceful, that it's violent. Like with respect to the Freedom Convoy in Ottawa right now. I mean, they are looking for any and every bit of evidence that they can find to show that it's violent. And it's been completely peaceful. There's been no arrests in Ottawa. You've had policemen congratulating these protesters. And yet still, the communists, being good communists, they're there to say, oh, this is Trudeau himself said it's violent. The leader of the Liberal Party, it's violent. Just to finish, Victor Davis Hanson, it says, the more confusion, chaos, and anarchy that follows, the more of their agenda they hope to push through. If not by legislative vote, then by executive edict, court decision, or by simply ignoring the law. Just by simply ignoring the law. And that's what Barack Obama has done. It's all about carrying out this radical agenda. And they're having some good success. That's why the Bible describes it as success from their standpoint, I mean. But that's why the Bible describes it as bitter, bitter affliction. That's why the Bible says about the Jeroboam administration that there's just no helper. The bitter affliction. I mean, Jeroboam's going to have to war just to recover what's been stolen because he's going up against a movement that will send the shock troops to the streets to destroy if it suits their purpose. They will steal elections. They'll send federal agents out into a protest to try to cause violence, to try to frame the opposition, to try to get them in jail. They're in our case here in America, they're fellow Americans. And the radical left, they're going by the same playbook in Canada. It's not like this is just unique to the United States, this communist infiltration. Look around. Look at the leadership, or lack thereof, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in Australia, in New Zealand, and of course here in the United States. listen to Justin Trudeau yesterday. He's still in hiding. Who knows where he is? But he's in hiding, and this is what he had to say about he's not going to meet with these protesters. He's not going to address their concerns. He's just going to say they're dangerous and violent. That's it. And then in this clip here, he talks about how wonderful it is to be out there with BLM. This is clip two.
I have attended protests and rallies in the past when I agreed with the goals, when I supported the people expressing their concerns and their issues. Black Lives Matter is an excellent example of that. But I have also chosen to not go anywhere near protests that have expressed hateful rhetoric, violence towards fellow citizens, and a disrespect not just of science, but of the frontline health workers and, quite frankly, the 90% of truckers who have been doing the right thing to keep Canadians safe, to put food on our tables. Canadians know where I stand. This is a moment for responsible leaders to think carefully about where they stand and who they stand with.
So, I mean, Black Lives Matter, they're perfect. Well, he said they're an excellent example, Black Lives Matter. So I'll get out there and support their movement. They're concerned about the real issues. But this other group, you know, the tens of thousands that showed up, the millions probably all totaled that turned out just to support the convoy as it was passing through their town. I'm not going to talk to them. Too much hateful rhetoric. Too much violence, he says. Yesterday, Trudeau just had a complete and total meltdown on Twitter. He gave that statement that you just saw there outside of Cracker Barrel or somewhere. Then here he is on Twitter, and he says, I know this pandemic is frustrating. It's frustrating that after 2 years, we're not done fighting COVID-19. But over the past few days, Canadians have been shocked and frankly disgusted by the behavior displayed by some people protesting in our nation's capital. Is that true? Are Canadians shocked and disgusted by what we're seeing in Ottawa or on the convoy that went right across the nation? Is that why so many turned out in droves? To wave the Canadian flag? To cheer on the convoy? To hug strangers? To nearly freeze to death? He says, I want to be very clear. We're not intimidated by those who hurl abuse at small business workers and steal food from the homeless. Oh, here's that story. Joe Scarborough really latched onto this one. Yeah, they're stealing food from the homeless. Did you know this? It says, we won't give in to those who fly racist flags. Uh-oh. Did someone show up with a Confederate flag? Yes, yes, there was someone who showed up with a Confederate flag. He works for the Trudeau government, but we'll let that go. It says, and we won't cave to those who engage in vandalism or dishonor the memory of our veterans. Oh, man, so, it sounds so violent what's happening. No arrests. No incidents of violence. And this is the Prime Minister of the nation of Canada. This would be scandalous, really. If we were in more normal times, let's just put it that way, this would be a scandal. This is the kind of leader that would just be run out of town. Are you really attacking your own citizens this way? He said yesterday, there is no place in Canada for this behavior. So, to those responsible, it needs to stop. And to those who joined the convoy but are uncomfortable with the symbols of hatred and division on display, be courageous and speak out. Do not stand for or with intolerance and hate. Be courageous and speak out. Well, where are the counter-protesters? If he has such widespread support for his communist agenda, where is his movement? Where are his shock troops taking to the streets? Because we certainly see the other side. Yesterday, a pretty dramatic standoff at the border there at Montana and Alberta. I forget the name of the crossing there. The Coots Crossing, I believe it's called. And here again, trucks coming in and just clogging up the artery so that it's basically stopped traffic going from either side, from the States into Canada or from Canada into the United States. So those two groups are, I know Canada sent in some law enforcement to try to settle the dispute. They're currently in negotiations and such. But the Trudeau government's pretty much doubling down, refusing to address the demands of the majority, and now threatening to even put a vaccine mandate in place going from one province to the next. Not just from Canada to the United States or the U.S. to Canada, but from one province to the next. You can't even travel in Canada. That's what they're talking about. That's what they're doubling down on, the insanity. This is the way the communist left works. This is the way they think. They're doubling down on the insanity. They're ignoring the concerns of the majority. And then saying that the majority is violent. And they're trying to create violence. Listen to this. This is Trudeau's House leader, Mark Holland is his name. Clip 3.
Some have described yesterday's protests as peaceful. Do you agree? Do you think they were peaceful?
I don't believe that these protests were peaceful. I believe there were peaceful people and well-intending people there. Don't mishear that. But there were many people who came with ulterior agendas and who displayed those agendas in ways that were deeply hurtful.
Right, and if they had a DOJ like the United States does, you can be sure they'd be unleashing the biggest investigation in the history of Canada to try to find the trespassers or whoever and to put hundreds of them in jail. Do you believe it was peaceful? No. No, I mean, that's the leader of Trudeau's party. He's saying it's violent. And, of course, they've got the full support of the media. Canadian Revenue Agency accused truckers of ransacking offices in Ottawa. This is from CTV News. Calling protesters peaceful hides the truth. Don't call them peaceful. Call them violent. That's how we work. When the city's burning down behind us, that's what's peaceful. If it's our shock troops that are doing it. But then if it's an actual peaceful protest, it's violent. See how it works? CBC admitted they used anonymous text to smear the convoy. They lie. CBC had to come admit that. Experts interviewed, these are some of the headlines. Experts interviewed by media tell them it was far-right extremists are being funded by the Trudeau government, like the guy waving the Confederate flag. Global News had this headline. Far-right groups hope trucker protest will be Canada's January 6th. It's January 6th. It's Canada's January 6th. Canadian Press says this. Ottawa police contact trucker convoy leaders preparing for potential violence. There's always the potential of violence. They can see it. The radical left right here in the United States, they see potential violence with the midterm elections, and in 2024, they see potential cheating. They see a lot of potential lawlessness that they're currently engaged in, you see. It says here, CTV News, so many angry people. Experts say online conversation around trucker convoy veering into dangerous territory. And then there's always those that are examining social media sites saying, yeah, this is dangerous rhetoric. These people are inciting riots. And in the case of January 6th, as we well know, they send in federal agents to incite vandalism and violence because they want to trap you. They want to frame you. They want to frame the opposition and then throw them in jail. Throw the book at them. Why? If Lindsey Graham wants them to throw the book at these January 6th protesters, then Ray Epps, he should be at the front of the line as far as going to prison is concerned. Why won't they throw the book at Ray Epps? Why doesn't Lindsey Graham, when he's asked about that, I played the clip yesterday, but when he's asked about that, why doesn't he say, you know what? I do want to get to the bottom of January 6th. I wonder why Ray Epps isn't in jail. Why haven't we thrown the book at Ray Epps? And if he was a Fed, that presents a lot of problems in my mind. I think that we need to clean house in the DOJ and the FBI. He's a Republican senator, and he doesn't have the courage to stand up to the radical communist left. I'll get to that point here in just a second. But you've got the Confederate flag. You've got another person. I guess there was a swastika. And then he disappears from the scene. They're trying to find out who he is. I'm sure we're going to find out he has some interesting connections to the communists. That seems to be the way that it always plays out. This Freedom Convoy has raised more money from more Canadians than Trudeau's Liberal Party did in the last election. Can you believe this? Who really has the majority support here? The convoy's been around for a couple weeks, and it's already raised more money and from more Canadians than Trudeau's party did in the last election? He won by the slimmest of margins. Some would say he cheated. Because they steal. They do steal elections, communists. This is the way they win. Because they don't have popular support. That's the thing. The National Post, they're quoting Elon Musk. He's been tweeting, he's the billionaire, the world's richest man. He's been tweeting his support for the trucker convoy. The headline, Elon Musk says fringe minority is actually the government. Who? That's, of course, a play on what Trudeau said a week ago. Who actually has the fringe minority on their side? That would be the government. That would be the people in charge. The overwhelming majority, as Musk brings out, it was followed by another tweet, this is the article, saying, if the government had the mandate of the people, there would be a significant counter-protest. There is not. Therefore, they do not. That's Elon Musk pointing out the obvious. If Justin Trudeau had majority support in Canada, there would be a massive counter-protest. We want vaccine mandates. We want to wear masks forever. There's no protest supporting that. Why? And why is it the same in other Israelite nations like the UK? Where are the tens of thousands of people in Melbourne turning up to say, we want triple masks? We want a fourth jab. It's just the opposite. They don't have a mandate. Protesting in a Canadian winter shows real commitment, Musk tweeted. They're coming out in these Arctic temperatures to support truckers and their right to protest against these authoritarian, draconian decrees made by communists in government. This is from Breitbart. 50% support impeaching Joe Biden. 50%? This was put up by John Nolte just the other day. It includes 50% of black voters who want to see Joe Biden impeached. Can you even believe these numbers? Blacks are supposed to support the Democrat no matter what by about a 90% to 10% ratio. And here is this Rasmussen poll that says 50% of black voters, they want Biden impeached. Rasmussen says 45% are opposed to impeaching Biden, including 33% who strongly oppose it. But, and are you ready for this? 34% of Democrats support impeaching Biden, as do 50% of black voters. That's not, says Nolte, that's not a typo. It says here, the internals here are fascinating. When these same respondents were asked if impeaching former President Trump twice was a good thing or a bad thing, only 36% said it was a good thing, while 47% said it was a bad thing. Impeaching Trump twice was a bad thing, say a majority of Americans. It's been estimated that 80,000 people turned out for Donald Trump's rally on Saturday night in Texas, and yet you would never know it. They sit there in the newsrooms. They wait for the one soundbite. He's going to give a pardon to the January 6th. The January 6th trespasser is going to get a pardon. And that's all they run on a continuous loop. Saturday night, Sunday, all into Monday. 80,000 people, though? Joe Biden barely got that many to vote for him. 80,000 people? ABC Ipsos poll says just 1%, Just 1% of Americans view President Joe Biden's economy as excellent. 1%? You never even hear a poll that has 1%. Now, I think 24% said the economy was good under Biden. So what does that tell you? If 25% in America think that the economy is either good or excellent, and 75% think it's bad or terrible, the 75% are looking out at the prices for gas or the prices for food at the grocery store. Listen to this, by the way. This is from NBC's advice on what to do with these skyrocketing costs at the grocery store. Clip 8.
So if you want something that's just more affordable than that, what should you get?
So we're going to talk about ways to substitute, right? But also shop at international and ethnic markets. A lot of times they'll have cuts of meat that are cheaper than normal. Mm-hmm. The other thing to do is substitute. Add in beans. It's like really supplement your meats. Like let's say you have a pound of ground beef and you're going to make chili. Add more beans. Use half a pound of that meat. The next day, use the other half on tacos or burritos.
Add more beans and shop at ethnic stores. Biden-Harris 2024, you think that's going to fly with just the ordinary working-class American? Can you begin to see how and why there was such widespread support for Donald Trump? As much as the media, the communists in the media and the Democratic Party, as much as they hated him and everything that he stood for, ordinary Joe thought, hey, this is what I've been wanting to hear for years. This Ipsos poll, the poll asked respondents how they would describe the state of the nation's economy these days. Only 1% said excellent, 23% said good, 47% said not so good, and 28% said poor. So 75% to 25%. Canada, you've got people lining the streets to support the trucker. Justin Trudeau's in hiding. And there are no counter-protesters. None. And no violence among the throngs of protesters in Ottawa. None. Conservative Treehouse. Excellent, excellent piece on the lack of courage. Given the popular support that someone like Donald Trump has, what he's pointing out here in this piece is it's stunning that there aren't more conservatives coming out stronger. It says here, one of the lesser discussed big picture stories being missed within the people's revolt against totalitarian government under the guise of this pandemic is the abject void of pragmatic conservative leadership in Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom. And really, you can add the United States to the mix as well. I mean, at least there is Donald Trump. But outside of that, like I say, or like I've said so many times before, so many of them are just weak. Ted Cruz calling the January 6th protest a violent terrorist attack? He sounds like the leader of the Liberal Party in Canada, on that point anyway. And Conservative Treehouse points out how that these nations, Australia, Canada, United Kingdom, they have parliamentary forms of government where, you know, you have to try to build coalitions, and how that in itself weakens people. It weakens their character. It encourages compromise. And then someone like Donald Trump comes along who doesn't compromise, or at least he keeps his promises. He's obviously not a perfect human being. He's made mistakes. He's made plenty of them. But he speaks for the people, and the people love it. 80,000 people turning out for a rally when it's 3 years away from the 2024 presidential election? It's unheard of. It says here, as the working class Canadians rally behind their blue-collar truck drivers, the invisibility of strong opposing voices to the leftist government are challenging is brutally obvious. I mean, they've got a leader of the Conservative Party right now who's just like one of the rhinos in Congress. He, I understand, might be replaced as soon as this week by someone who's a little bit stronger. But as Sundance brings out here, still, given the popular support, the fact that they're lining the streets all across Canada, where is the conservative voice demanding that the Canadian government address the concerns of the majority. They just don't exist. It says here, it's almost painful to watch this play out. Where are the men of courage? Where are they? We've made this point. Here again, the trumpet, tomorrow's news today. Where are the men of courage? It made me think of Ezekiel chapter 2. Drop my pen there. Ezekiel 2 verse 6, it says, And you, son of man, be not afraid of them, neither be afraid of their words. It says, though briars and thorns be with you, and you do well among scorpions, be not afraid of their words, nor dismayed at their looks, though they be a rebellious house. I mean, if you come under attack, how are you going to respond? What are you going to do? Well, for many, they want to compromise. It says here, there comes a time when you need to channel the raw frustration of your constituents, put them into articulate voice and focus, not pontificate about their delicate humanism in your arguments. And again, this is someone that obviously doesn't understand the spiritual dimension behind all that we're seeing. And these prophecies regarding Antiochus and Jeroboam and the attack on the United States and the attack, the communist infiltration that Herbert Armstrong talked about 50, 60, 70 years ago. But he's just looking at it simply as, look, you've got the popular support. The other side wants to destroy the nation as it was set up from the beginning. And where's your fight? Where's your courage? He says, as an American, this last year has certainly clarified for me why the yellow vests in France, the Brexiteers in the UK, and to a lesser extent, the working class in Australia, all previously supported Donald J. Trump. In essence, Donald Trump is the one unapologetic voice for working class people just about everywhere. Here are these conservatives, and it's, you know, a nice conversation back and forth in Parliament, and right outside, you've got tens of thousands of Canadians saying, we've had enough. Where's their Donald Trump? Look at what happened to Boris Johnson in the UK. He came in, there were people comparing him to Trump early on. He's been exposed as someone who's weak, lacking courage. You see it all throughout our nations. And look, on the spiritual level, there's a big takeaway here. My father addresses the importance of spiritual courage in Malachi's message. That's the book that got it all started for the Philadelphia Church of God. We talked about some of our history yesterday. If I have time, I'll get into that again today. But we're going to need courage to fight for God. We're going to need courage to stand up for the truth. We're going to need courage to hold fast to the traditions, whether you look at it spiritually or even physically. It says here, this is the, so Donald Trump is an unapologetic voice for the working class. It says, this is the time in the history of government when the core, central, and basic topic of freedom is being eroded. This is not a time for pastels. This is a time for bold contrasts. That's what you get when you listen to Donald Trump at a rally or otherwise. You get bold contrasts. It says here, the Western values of representative government either support the basic tenet that people should be free or that government does not. There is no middle ground. He says, we cannot be partially adherent to tyranny when the systems of government are demanding obedience to forced medical procedures. At this moment of consequence, we are either free to reject medical treatment or we are not free. There is no middle ground. Sundance writes, we are either free as unique individuals or move around our own country without some arbitrary registration process, or we are not free. There is no middle ground. He says, finally, the premise of papers, please, is either rejected or it is accepted. There is no middle ground. There's no compromise with any of this. You either have to show your papers to move freely in your own nation, or you don't. It's one or the other. And the people are saying, we don't want that. There's no middle ground. And then you listen to these people back and forth in Parliament, looking for middle ground, trying to find middle ground, with people on the other side that are saying the protest is violent, and that when Black Lives Matter destroys cities, I'm all for it. How do you compromise with someone like that? How do you find middle ground with someone who thinks that way? It says here, these are the core tenets that must be determined, argued, fought about, defended, and decided. There is no room for quizzling prose or the parsing of personage amid the discussion. As he says over and again, there is no middle ground. There's just no compromise with those who are trying to destroy the nation. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with more of that history and a bit of a Bible study following on what we got into on yesterday's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can send us a comment, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
I talked yesterday just about some of the growth and the expansion of God's work over the past 32 years and how that we've really looked to Herbert Armstrong and the pattern that he established back in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. And you can see his fingerprints on all that we've done here on this campus or at Edstone in the UK or the projects that we've been involved in Jerusalem, in Jordan, in other places. And what really kind of hit me like a bolt of lightning in class the other day was when I was talking about the sacrifices that had to be made, the cutbacks that we had to do back in 1999 and 2000. 2001, in order to just devote as much time, energy, and all the resources that we could to fighting in court over Mystery of the Ages, this wonderful book written by Herbert Armstrong in the very last year of his life. And then his successors came along and they wanted to bury this book. They didn't want you to read it. They don't want you to study it. They wanted to blot it out. Joe DiCoccio Jr. said it was his Christian duty to blot this out. To keep it out of print, to keep it out of circulation. And we fought for 6 years so that you could request that book freely. I'll give you the number again. If you don't have a copy of Mystery of the Ages, just call the number on your screen there, 1-866-930-3024. It's a toll-free number in the United States and Canada too. If you're part of the Freedom Convoy, you can call that toll-free number and get a copy of Mystery of the Ages. It's toll-free in the Caribbean. as well. But for 6 years, we're just funneling all these resources toward the litigation. And yet we purchase 160 acres of land, raw land, right here in the north of Edmond in central Oklahoma, with this view of expansion and growth. Some critics were saying that, well, this litigation was going to be it for this church, this little church. We would be finished by the end of the fight because we had so few resources compared to the Worldwide Church of God. As it was, we won. We got Mystery of the Ages and then some. We wrote Raising the Ruins on top of all of that. And now here we are, some 20 years on from that time period. And you see that Herbert Armstrong College has been around for two decades plus. We've had a campus in the UK for 6-7 years. God's work just continues to grow. Notice Amos 9 in verse 1, speaking of the litigation, the court case, the lawsuit, 6 years in court fighting for the truth. Verse 1 of Amos 9 says, "And I saw the Eternal standing upon the altar, and he said, Smite the lintel of the door, that the posts may shake, it says, and cut them in the head, all of them, and I will slay the last of them with the sword. It says, He that flees of them shall not flee away, and he that escapes of them shall not be delivered." So God's, he was present in the sanctuary. He was right there. Amos says, "I saw the Eternal." It doesn't say that the Eternal gave to Amos the message and then he went and delivered it. Amos says, "I saw him right there in this vision. He made a personal appearance. And he did it again." He's probably done it multiple times in the history of this work these past 30-some years. But he certainly did it. Jesus Christ certainly did it during the lawsuit years to lead us to victory. This gives you an indication of what's really important and uppermost in the minds of Jesus Christ and God the Father. This work is the most important activity on earth. And like I read in the first segment, it's important that we, as the servants of God, that we are courageous and bold like a lion. Because we've got to proclaim a message that is not popular, that the world at large won't receive. Look at the example of the prophets of old, or Jesus Christ himself. Jesus came into this dark world as a light, to bring light to this whole world. But it says in John 3 that men loved darkness. And so what did they do? Well, they went after Christ. They persecuted him. They murdered him. He went out, though, with some courage. He went out in faith. He knew if he resisted against sin all the way through to that final day, that God would then raise him right back to life as a spirit being, as the Son of God, born into the God family. And now ruling alongside God the Father on his throne, heading up the church of God, preparing for his marriage to the church. Serving as our advocate, our high priest, our intercessor. Verse 2, it says, "Though they dig into hell, thence shall my hand take them. Though they climb up to heaven, thence will I bring them down. And though they hide themselves in the top of Carmel, I will search and take them out thence. And though they be hid from my sight in the bottom of the sea, thence will I command the serpent, and he shall bite them." You just can't run away from these responsibilities that God's put upon us. We've got to run with this message, not run away from it. What a weighty responsibility we have, but if we have God's love dwelling in us, we're doing this for the world. Malachi 3 brings this out. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." John 3, verse 16, I went through that in principles this morning. talking about God's love, talking about the five senses, talking about emotion, how that God is an emotional being. I mean, what was going through God's mind as he was watching his son in the flesh just being slaughtered like an animal? God had to turn away. He even had to forsake his son when he became that sin sacrifice. But the agony, the emotion, and yet God carried on with that plan and purpose. Jesus Christ sacrificed himself for that plan and purpose. They love family so much that there they were thinking and directing their every action. Even when the emotions inside of them were crying out, I don't want to go through this. Christ said as much the night before, if it's possible for this cup to pass from me. And yet, what does that tell you about the way they were able to perfectly control their emotions and to carry on with this purpose and plan in love? Love is an unselfish, outflowing concern for others. Love sacrifices, God's love, it sacrifices for others. The Bible says that we ought to be a living sacrifice. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Do you fill up on that love of God daily? We certainly need it. There's no love of God. There's no godly love in this world today. This world is of the devil. It's deceived. Its God is Satan the devil. And that's why there's so much hatred and violence and competition and strife and bitterness and division. There was that clip on social media yesterday, this road rage incident where I guess one driver threw a water bottle at the car and the guy in the other car thought he was being shot at, so he pulls his gun out and fires off 11 rounds right there on the highway. Incredibly, nobody was killed. But imagine that kind of out-of-control rage. Where is the ability to use the mind to suppress those emotions, those angry emotions, and to say, you know what? I'm going to do the right thing here. I'm going to keep myself under control. I'm going to diffuse the situation. There's a lot of out-of-control behavior and emotions in the world today. But with God's help, we can control those emotions. We can channel them. We can use them actually to do the work. God is an emotional being, but he's never out of control with it because he's love. He is love. He obeys law and order. He creates law and order. And this is what he wants of us. He says, all right, I'll give you this responsibility, this message. Now, don't run from it. Just have courage. Have courage and have love. Do your job and let me back and support you. Let me, like I read yesterday in Zechariah 4, let me perform the miracles. Let me flatten the mountains so that you can just barrel right ahead in doing this work. Verse 7, it says here in Amos 9, are ye not as children of the Ethiopians unto me, O children of Israel, saith the Eternal? Have not I brought up Israel out of the land of Egypt? I mean, God brought us out of captivity. Why did God bring us here? Why does God bring us into the church? Why does God bring us into his family so that we can just sit around and wait? He brings us here always, always, always because there's a work to be done, because there's a work to support, because there's a work to put our heart into. There's a work to fervently and effectually pray about. There's a work to meditate on. This is, if it's God's work, it's the most important activity on earth. Verse 11, it says, in that day will I raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up his ruins and build it as in the days of old. I mean, that's what we're doing with this work, with this campus. We're raising up the ruins of Herbert Armstrong's work, the work that God did through Herbert Armstrong and that his successors destroyed, dismantled, bit by bit, by every little bit. And we're also raising the ruins of King David's throne. There's a new throne, and it's about to be transferred to Jerusalem. Jesus Christ is about to return to this earth so that he can rule the earth with a rod of iron. That's what this world needs. That's what's coming. That's what we pray about first in our prayers. Thy kingdom come. Well, we certainly acknowledge God first. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. It's just an outline, but it's a good one to stick to. Worshiping God, supporting God, praising God, and then earnestly praying that thy kingdom come, that thy kingdom be established on this earth, that you would hasten the day. As Peter said, what a responsibility, though, raising the ruins of Herbert Armstrong's work, raising the ruins of King David's throne, that everlasting covenant that God made with David. I'm going to establish a throne in you and through your line, and it's going to continue right on through to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And he's going to rule the world from the throne of David. Verse 12, it says, that they may possess the remnant of Edom and of all the heathen, which are called by my name, saith the Eternal that doeth this. We were able to possess the remnant. We gained possession of what was rightfully ours at the end of 6 years of litigation. We were the ones following in the steps of Herbert Armstrong. We're the only ones. We have all this literature. I'm contacted from time to time by other groups that have a loose affiliation with Herbert Armstrong, asking if we can share the literature with them. And I say, look, it's right there on our website. We'll send it out to anyone. These are ours. These copyrights are ours. We fought in court for them. And so if people are interested, even if they're in a Laodicean group, by all means, contact this church. Contact God's work. And we'll send them out a free copy. No problem. But we value this. We value this so much that we fought for it, that we risked everything in some ways for 6 years. And God blessed that courage. He blessed it. Look around at the fruits. Look at what's happened since the litigation ended in 2003. Look at what happened since the property was purchased in 2000. What a wonderful God we serve. And I won't take the time to go through these remaining verses, but you can see how that this Raising the Ruins project, it extends right on into the wonderful world tomorrow. We're going to be building for God for all eternity. We're going to be working for and serving God for all eternity. We're going to be loving the God family the way that God the Father and Christ the Son love the family and are willing to sacrifice everything for the family. That way of life is going to spread over all the earth in the coming years. It's going to spread over all the universe once this plan and purpose is extended on out beyond the wonderful world tomorrow, beyond the millennium, beyond the great white throne judgment period, to that time that really marks, as Mr. Armstrong says at the end of this book, the beginning. You get 7,000 years into the plan of God and you're just getting to the beginning. Then you get to the really, really exciting stuff. Call our operators and get your own copy of Mystery of the Ages, 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.